This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. See if I remember how to do this. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here.
Thank you for taking the reins in my stead week, Sam. Justin Davis is here.
Scoop.
And Mark Medina.
Hello.
Who is hopefully not too sick of talking about The Last of Us Part 1 at this point.
I was like, great, another comment section to be mad at me. Let's do this.
Is this the last of your Last of Us tour, at least?
This is the final stop on The Last of Us tour.
So you can change all your opinions based on audience feedback.
Exactly. Yeah. It is worth your money, but it's awful game. Let's do this.
you should just say something different every single time.
Yeah.
But you know what? You can cater to the Scoop audience for this one.
Okay. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. We do have a great show for this week. We'll talk about said Last of Us Part 2, which will be out by the time you're listening to this or watching this. Mm-hmm. We will talk about Assassin's Creed Mirage.
What?
Or will we? Is it all a mirage?
We'll
have to wait and see. But first, another game that's out by the time you're listening slash watching to this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Cowabunga Collection. And, well, it's just great. I'll just cut right to the chase. It's just another great package from Digital Eclipse. They're doing God's work over there in, what, Emeryville? Is that where they are, Sam?
Yeah, thereabouts. East Bay, San Francisco Bay Area.
This is from the same crew that brought you the Mega Man Legacy Collections, the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection, the Blizzard Arcade, and numerous others. And they're just doing the best job of collecting older games and presenting them in a really, really nice package, adding in all these bonus features, fixing the games in certain places, making them play better than they ever have before, and then archiving all this extra, like, box art, instruction manuals, design documents. The design documents included in these games are incredible.
I mean, there's straight up drawings and, you know, all in Japanese design documents to create the first Ninja Turtles game for NES, for example. Like, the fact that that was preserved in any way is just mind-blowing to me, and the fact that they got their hands on it and it's just here for you to look at, and that was all, you know, checked off on, is it's a miracle. It's unbelievably cool. The collection's worth, for me, that alone to own it.
So Sam and I both dove into this last night. Justin, Mark, either of you have this yet?
Yep.
I played
it yesterday.
Okay. All right. So for anyone who isn't aware, this is a collection of the games from the early 90s when Konami had the license for the Ninja Turtles. So it's the original arcade game and then its sequel, Turtles in Time. It's the four NES games. The original one that's sort of like
really, well, it's really difficult for one thing. It's also kind of convoluted, but pretty clever in how mm-hmm. you know, well thought out it is. And I think at one time it was the best-selling third-party NES game. Then it had its sequel, which was a port of the arcade game, when Konami realized, okay, maybe we don't need to be quite so... maybe just some straightforward brawler action will suffice for Ninja Turtles.
And, it was just brawlers all the way down until the fighting games, and then some weird Game Boy games, which
that's the thing. When one-on-one fighting games started to gain favor over brawlers, then Teenage Mutant Turtles went that route as well. The other NES games are TMNT 3, The Manhattan Project, and then the Tournament Fighters, which is the fighting game that also came to Super Nintendo and Genesis. Turtles in Time was ported to Super Nintendo. That's in there. And then there was a unique game for the Genesis called the Hyperstone Heist. And then there's the three Game Boy games, too, that are included, too, which is all kind of... So, good package of early 90s arcade or TMNT games from Konami.
And they have the arcade versions of the brawlers and not just the home console versions. Is that correct? I haven't played it yet myself, but I think I read that.
Yes.
Yep. That is...
And so, that's awesome. What's so exciting about that is, like, the arcade versions, they're not, like, lost to time or anything like that, but, like, they're not the version that people ever played and have memories of. Everyone remembers playing the game at home, right? Because they had the game in their home, and that's what they played over and over again. So that's what I'm excited to dive into personally, is sort of experience the original arcade versions of these games.
Yeah. The arcade, you can, you know, play them all four players. What else, Sam? What else is notable? The strategy guides?
Yeah, well, that's really... Did you notice it was in the style of the Nintendo Power strategy guide era, where it was like, you know, from the first gen? What I think of note is that each time Digital Eclipse does one of these, they think of like some cool new things they can do with emulation or restoration or preservation. And there's not... I'll just go over some current tricks. They're not necessarily all new tricks because they've been used before. But one of them is the rewind button. Love that. Mm-hmm. That makes a game like the TMNT NES game, which is very difficult. It ramps up quickly and stays up. It gets a very long game that gets very difficult quickly.
Yeah.
Makes that potentially possible. What's even better is that they have this mode where somebody plays through the game not as a video, but as like, you know, a ROM that's receiving commands. So you can hop in anytime while you're watching that person beat a game perfectly and take it over and just die immediately, which is what I've been doing the entire time I've been playing this. Very few games have I started from the beginning. I like watching somebody like, oh, this is the best way to go about doing this stuff. And then I hop in and mess with it. And today I played all of the Turtles NES bosses I'd never played before. And there's some like that game has surprising amounts of Simon's Quest and Contra and things like that in it, which make it like a really appealing, cool NES game. It's just like, I think it like had that kind of rush to market situation where it's not exactly balanced and there's a bunch of difficult, hard to understand problems with it. But like, I really like it. And I like, you do a lot of different things in it. We were talking about ahead of the show. There's an overworld for one section. I'd even know this. Later sections of the game have other overworlds that you explore and you go inside, and it's like Blaster Master in that way. I mean, what a clever, cool game. In fact, like, I would say that and then TMNT, the third TMNT game for Game Boy are like the really interesting games. I don't think it's Manhattan Project. It's called
For Game Boy.
It's called like The Search for Your Buddy or something. I'll find it.
I mean, TMNT on NES is at least three times as big as it needs to be, like, as a game. It just goes on forever, and, like, nobody ever... It was too hard for kids, and so no one ever saw any of those later levels. And so that's, like, that's another reason why collections like this are so perfect.
Yeah.
Turtles 3 Radical Rescue. And it's basically a Metroid-like. You have a lot of agency to go where you want while you explore a base, and you recover your buddy turtles. You start as just one turtle. And so it's made as a single-player game, another like interesting distinction that hasn't happened since the NES game, too. I check it out. It's really worth checking out. And by the way, the Game Boy emulation is good, and you can see the first Game Boy game and like what Game Boy games were doing when, you know, Super Mario Land came out versus what Game Boy games were doing when they like ported Donkey Kong Country to the Game Boy. It's the technology get so amazing for you know, scrolling levels on Game Boy. It's just amazing.
So each game has what they call enhancements, and it goes beyond just like increasing the amount of lives that you have. For the NES games, you can turn off sprite flicker and slow down.
Oh,
cool.
Yes,
well, there's a huge part of that game.
That was like one of the first things I noticed playing through the first or second level of the NES game was I was like, oh yeah, this is slowing down at all the same. Mega Man Collection did that as well. Like, you know when the game slows down, and it was doing it at all the right spots.
That's miraculous.
Yeah. It's completely miraculous. In the fighting games, you can toggle on the ability to pit certain characters against each other that you weren't previously able to.
Hmm.
And then they created an original strategy guide for every single one of the games. And they're not like super long, but they're presented in a very colorful, like Sam said, Nintendo Power
like
style.
A paper layout.
And they have they have like 5 to 7 different tips for the game. And if the tips are interactive, like if it tells you how to beat a certain boss, you can just hit play and it'll play a little video of showing you how to do it. It's really, really well thought out.
They really
so clever.
Yeah. Really and good. Then there's all the supplemental assets. There's the box art for, you know, each version of the game, the Japanese versions and the US versions and the European versions. I thought it was interesting, Sam, that throughout the entire span of all these games in Japan, the box art always remained super cartoony. Whereas when they went on in the US, they tried to get a little bit more edgy.
Those airbrush. I mean, it's like that side art for the arcade machine. It's like they just are just doing the bizarre live action side art stuff. And then like really dark looking characters with like mean eyes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they include, you know, advertisements. So advertisements for the games that would run in magazines at the time. And one really, really stood out to me. It was an ad for just Ultra Games upcoming lineup. And people probably remember seeing this. You probably can't see this. This image in, it's not going to be in focus. This one?
Yeah.
So when they show like the turtles and then the skateboarder and then there's like a knight riding a horse. These are the games we have coming to the NES. We'd like to shed a little light on our upcoming hits. But the copy... they forgot to mention one of those three games, I think for sure. So, like I said, Turtles, Skateboarder, and then A Knight on a Horse. Mm-hmm. So the copy says, Ultra, the hottest new game generator in town, is about to unleash 3 of the most thrilling games of all time for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Take sides with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in a nunchucking, karate-chopping sewer fight through the villain-ravaged streets of New York. And finally, cruise down back alleys and skate or die, a knockdown, drag-out, multi-event spectacular that pits you against a friend or Bionic Lester.
Wait a second.
And that's it. Then that's
so
it.
What, I'm trying to think of what the Ultra game with the knight on the horse is.
I was trying to think of that, too. Did they do, like, Knights of the Round or anything like that? I don't remember. And then, in more of the ads, I don't know if you noticed this, Sam, a lot of the photos of certain games and game packs are redacted. Because they don't have the rights to show some of those, I guess.
Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
The packaging of this is just kind of like, you know, we thought of everything, and I think it's really amazing. I have dream collections of games that I want to see get this treatment, but like it's kind of like the license packaging is like. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say it. Like, licensed games are usually really bad. And so, like, these Turtles games, like, there's really only, like, a couple of them that I actually want to play or really own. But that everything else makes up for that because it's just, like, a really cool historical thing. I don't really like Turtles either. So it's, like, that's really good. But, like, I'm never going to play Tournament Fighters, let alone the 3 versions of it. But it was really cool seeing the Genesis game, which I'd never seen before. All the brawlers are kind of boring on consoles. But the arcade ones are classics, right? So,
mm-hmm. Oh, that hurts me. I love my favorite in the collection is Turtles in Time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Super Nintendo one. Like that game is like ingrained in my memory. I love that game so much. But well, did you also I grew up with it.
Yeah.
I haven't played the arcade one because last night I dove into the Super Nintendo one. Sounds like I want to see like the same.
I think the Super Nintendo one is a faithful port, but there's only you can only play with 2 characters. But then they added in like a couple extra stages, so it's like,
Sam's right though that like the connective tissue being Ninja Turtles is interesting. We're like I don't know, like a Mega Man collection or a Street Fighter collection. It's like, oh, it's a collection of fighting games. But like Ninja Turtles is like, I hope you like brawlers and fighting games and handheld Metroidvanias and
collection whatever. Of turtle games.
Yeah, like the genre defying NES Ninja Turtles games. Like they're really, really different. And like I don't have Cowabunga collection yet, but like yeah, I also would not be interested in tournament fighters. I'm only here for the other stuff,
yeah,
I think. Just,
yeah, that's more of a novelty.
But if they left it out, then everybody would be like, oh, but they left out this. So like I like how the completionist aspect of this collection is important to them as it is important to the people that are their audience, which are basically collectors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The truth is when you play several of these brawlers back to back, the original TMNT arcade game, Turtles in Time, the Manhattan Project and Hyperstone Heist, there's a lot of overlap between all these. They all basically have the same setup. The turtles are watching
jump and kick down.
Yeah, there's that. And then the turtles are watching April do a news report on TV, and either she's kidnapped or the Statue of Liberty is kidnapped. They have to always start in New York City. You go to the Terrordrome, you fight all the same bosses, Bebop, Rocksteady, Krang, Leatherhead, the alligator guys. So there's just so much overlap.
There's 1 million foot soldiers.
Some of the levels are named the same from game to game. Like the final Shell Shock was one of the final levels in multiple games. Anyway, and then the last thing that, like Sam mentioned, that the design docs for most of these games are very, very extensive. In some cases, they're like 50 pages long of all hand-drawn images and hand-drawn, like, basically like mission statements and reasons. Like for the TMNT NES game, it says plain as day, the Ninja Turtles are very popular in America and we think kids will buy this video game, basically.
Oh, and there's also in the not only just print ads but press kits, which is just like so cool to think like our world is immersed in PR and press kits for games, but like the concept of that, there was of course PR, public relations, that existed for movies and TV shows, but you know the game startup industry at that time, like it's really janky looking. It's really funny. You got to wonder, like, were these sent to like USA Today, like college papers? Like, it's just, it's so fascinating to think of like why they needed to do anything other than put this on the cover of Nintendo Power and tell kids to buy it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what they did.
It certainly worked.
Anyway, Cowabunga Collection is out now. Super recommend it. Another great offering from Digital Eclipse. If I hear Digital Eclipse is working on anything, I'm immediately
kill it.
Looking forward to that.
Amazing.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Another game I've been playing recently and I was quite enjoying is Cult of the Lamb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Is this a Cult of the Lamb podcast? All right. Well,
except but Damon's got jammed up. I got jammed up.
You jammed up?
Yeah, I'm jammed up.
Oh, no.
I got the lamb jam. So anyway, I was loving this game. Super dainty game. I think everybody knows by now. It's half like village maintenance sim and then half, you know, go on a run.
See, I predicted that you wouldn't like that village maintenance sim part of it because I know you don't like Animal Crossing and stuff like that.
Well, I didn't mind it, but I just didn't get to do too much. Basically, I'm stuck. I cannot leave my cult now. I can't leave my village.
Oh, no.
When I try to leave, there's like this gray fog that's blocking my exit, and the game's not telling me anything to do. And
I think you need to talk to one of your villagers.
Believe me, I've done that. I've searched around. Apparently, this is a common bug on the Switch version where I'm playing it, and there is no known fix for it right now. One thing is like I might have to perform a ritual.
Yeah.
Except the rituals have a very long cooldown time. You're like waiting for that. And then now that my cooldown is done, you have to have a certain amount of lumber to do your ritual. And I don't have any lumber. Yeah. And there are no more trees left in my village.
Oh, no.
You have to venture out. Yeah.
So I can't. So yeah, I was really, really liking the game. And then I got totally stuck.
Oh, bummer.
That's too bad. I've actually heard of quite a few people getting glitches with it. I haven't really had any. The only one I had was I killed everybody on the screen and it just wouldn't let me advance. And I didn't have the like move you get later on where you could warp out. And so I was just stuck and I had to just quit out of the game and go back in.
That's too bad. Yeah, no, I'm loving it. That's definitely the game I've been playing the most over the last week. It couldn't be more of a Justin game between sort of like the Tunic-ish, you know, top down combat and then the village sim. Like the Animal Crossing comparison, like it's not like as someone that plays a lot of PC simulation village building games.
Yeah,
I find very superficial and kind of like basic, but it is satisfying and fun. And like, I like how it all ties into skill trees for your combat and character later on. Like they do a really, really good job of kind of, it's more like peanut butter and jelly than it is like oil and water. Like they mix together better than you might think they would, the two halves of the game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like there's two ways to like look at this game. For me, the first like 4 or 5 hours I was playing it, it was do the farming stuff to make myself better, to make myself get through the runs better and be able to do that kind of stuff. And then I kind of switched halfway through and I was like, you know what? Yeah. The runs only exist to make my farm better. Oh, okay. I can't do anything else. You need lumber. I'm going on a run. And I would just do old levels and stuff like that just to get.
Yeah,
because I was grinding. Like, this is a farming game to me now.
Yep,
this
exactly.
And the music is so good.
Yeah, I love all the sound, actually.
I also don't think that what you guys just described is an accident, because like I also ran out of lumber. And like I think the game, it's pretty deliberate about like we're going to make sure people have like not quite enough lumber to do what they need to do. Right. Like and then it forces people into like everyone thinks that like, oh, like I'm playing this game in kind of I'm going on my own journey. But like you can feel the hand of like the designer, I think, underneath the surface.
Oh, man, I've been fishing a lot. That just reminded me.
And I feel like you could like push yourself to progress. I could have beaten the game a long time ago, but I'll go back and do old worlds just because I'm like, nah, I'm not here to progress. I just need to chop down some trees and stuff like that. The game's also just so adorable. My Twitter banner the game came out is a dissenter with the megaphone because I think it's the most adorable thing ever when they get super mad and they're all robble, 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 robble.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I love the whole vibe of the game. I was really enjoying it. I hope they patch it. And I can get back into it.
Oh, bummer.
But Sam, you've also been playing Arcade Paradise?
Yeah, I have. As introduced on last week's episode, as a game that I should definitely play, I grabbed it and started playing it. I wanted to play a whole lot before this episode. And so this is the game we talked about last week, just to refresh people, where it's an arcade sim, basically, where you're the arcade operator. So you're buying games and placing them and making sure that you can make profits off of them. The best part of the game is what they're showing right now when you go in your little coin collecting runs. this is still in the actual worst part of the game, the place you start out in. So there's things I like about this game a lot. Like, I like that you grab these games and you place them, and then you have this kind of coin collection, and it happens, like, as long as you stay in the arcade or in the laundromat, you earn money, and you get, like, you can actually, like, tweak the games and make sure they earn more and stuff. That's like so spot on for how arcades work that I like have tremendous respect for that, and it's really fun. But I'm not having a whole lot of fun with this game. It definitely hit my addictive, I don't want to say addictive, it has hooked me in this like way that like I don't like, which is just like I want to do a lot, but it's not that fun to do, because your dad gives you this laundromat and he doesn't even want you to have an arcade, and your dad is kind of a jerk. And he like tells you the stuff from his yacht about what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, whereas your sister is encouraging you, I think it's your sister, to do the arcade and like follow your dreams. But the laundromat part of it is way too much. You have to do this so much.
Oh my God.
The laundromat part goes on forever.
I just made the switch where I'm like, I can just sit here and do nothing and not do the laundry finally and make more money, which is really funny because there's an achievement that are like a little daily task. It's like, don't do any laundry today. So like the game knows that, but it took me so long to get there. I hate the laundry.
That's exactly what I was going to suggest. I think the game is like I think in like an unofficial, informal way, it's testing players. Mm-hmm. How long does it take a player to figure out they can ignore the laundromat? Because like, Damon, you haven't played it yet, right, Damon?
I haven't yet, no.
The conceit of the game is you have a laundromat with like one crappy dingy arcade machine in it. And then as you go, you end up with this huge, crazy arcade by the end with like a laundromat in the corner. And like, but like it starts out as like a laundry sim. And then it's like, now you have two arcade machines and four arcade machines. And like the game never tells you, yo, don't do the laundry part anymore. Like you have to figure out for yourself, like, wait a second, like, I don't want to be doing this. And like, it'll take a little longer because the laundromat portion actually makes you money. But yeah, Sam, that would be my suggestion, is just stop engaging with that.
I did that, like, but I was doing the calculations. I was like, I do want a couple hundred more bucks today. And I was like, I just have to do it. And like, that's what was driving me crazy, was like, you know, to buy new games. And now I'm in a good shape and like, it should be fine. But like, it is really funny how that happens.
What would you say? I saw a Mr. Driller clone and then a GTA clone.
Oh, yeah. They're all playable. It's got like 25 that you can play all the arcade games.
Yeah, it's like GTA style, but it actually has a little mini map in the corner that reveals that it is just Pac-Man, and you can just play the mini map. It's really funny. But here's another thing that it's not a bad thing that the game does, it's something that I personally don't like. It's set in 1999, 2000. So you have this really early access to eBay and, you know, a dial-up modem, and, you know, it's still hard lines. And then a lot of these games are, I guess, quote unquote, new. Some of them, you do get retro-ish ones eventually. But like that setting, like if I had to pick one era of game to like be like, oh, this is a time to run an arcade, it would absolutely be not that one, because like it's not the Street Fighter era, which is really exciting. It's not the Pac-Man era, which is really exciting and could have like a really cool style. It's like this really ugly, crappy PC looking game era of arcade machines, as told by this world. It's just ugly. The whole game is just like kind of a bummer. And like when I'm in my arcade, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. It's neat, but like you play those games and you're like, well, I wish this was about 25 games that came out before 1983. That would be so different and so remarkable and cool, but it's just not. And so just expect that and understand that it's like, it's about a nostalgia that like basically you can't have, because arcades did not exist in the year 2000. So it's like, it doesn't really make sense. It's this kind of fantasy universe that is kind of weird. Now, if you made an arcade game that was set now, that would be really interesting, because there's a bunch of like kind of cool contemporary arcade games, like four player Pac-Man Versus, and I don't know. There's ones that are out there now, and then also it could just be about a retro arcade, right? And then that's a popular thing. Maybe mix it with a bar or something. But like the laundromat turn of the century thing, oof, It's rough to get through for me, but I like, and also like it's, it feels like work. Like, frankly, like I don't run the a lot of the elements of this arcade that I have games at, but I'm adjacent to it constantly. And of course, have to think about it and where I bring in games and stuff like that. And like, it's really adorable to see how this works.
I think that similar to Cult of the Lamb, like I think it probably deliberately gives you not enough wood to force you to play the game in a certain way. This game does a similar thing where you can play the arcade machines, but then you lose money. You don't make as much money if you don't go switch over people's laundry.
Yeah.
And so there's this tension of like a little timer goes off and I'm like, fuck, I gotta go put those clothes in the dryer, but you're like right in the middle of a round of a game. And so then you, like me as the player, you make a choice to like, screw the laundry. Like I'm gonna ignore it and I'm just gonna keep playing this arcade game. And I think that that's a really interesting bit of role play, is this rebellious 20 something that's running your dad's laundromat of like, nah, I only care about this arcade game instead.
Yeah, it's that best type of video games where there's like a meta story that doesn't need to be told in the exposition. It's being told in your gameplay decisions. Like that's really smart. That's the pinnacle of why I play games. So kudos to that. Also, at this point, I need to wait because, you know, like arcade machines make money by the hour. And so before it was like, oh, I'll do other things and make money. But now that money's so inconsequential that it's finally at the point where I'm like, I'm just going to play games and wait, which is what it should be, I think, a little bit earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Sounds like it's at least worth a look for me.
I think check so. Yeah. I mean, you should take over my save. You'll love it.
Okay.
Skip all the boring stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mark, The Last of Us Part 1. You did not review it for IGN.
No.
But you've played a bunch of it. I believe Luke Riley reviewed it for IGN and gave it a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Not too surprising. The original game is fantastic. I don't know why a remake would be not fantastic.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Mark?
Am I the only one here who's played it? No one else has played it?
Well, I've heard Mark talk about it on several shows, so I can summarize his thoughts if you want.
It's awesome, right? It's instantly one of the best-looking PS5 games. It's the work they put into making this game exist for players today, people who have not played the game yet or want to experience, quite frankly, the best version of this game. Like, they absolutely nailed it. I just don't think it's for a lot of people, and that I think that that's okay. I think a lot of, even our review asks, like, why does this need to exist? And everybody can come up with their own theories on why it needs to exist. You know, it's coming out tomorrow or today, I guess, if you're watching this on Friday. Which the age, you know, you're like, is it for the HBO show? Well, the HBO show is still a long ways away, right? So it's not really like tying in. But you could say that the hope is that people are going to watch the HBO show and then they're going to be like, okay, now I want to play The Last of Us. And you get this like really cool definitive version of this game. It might turn somebody off to be like, oh, it's a PS4 game that is just kind of a cleaned up PS3 game. Like, I don't want to play that. But like, this doesn't look like that. This looks like Last of Us Part 2. So... You know, I'm sure that that's why it exists. We were talking on our other podcast, and Matt brought up a good point where it's like, he said he felt like it would be kind of jarring to play the remaster and then go to Last of Us Part 2. And it just wouldn't really feel like that anymore. It's a very seamless transition.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because it's like they changed the UI. So it's like when you crank, you know, you do the cranking for like generators and stuff like that. It all looks like Last of Us Part 2 now. So there's not this like change from old UI to new UI.
It's like the Mass Effect collection kind of did that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because one was like, from what I've heard, one was a lot different than 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And they kind of like brought it up to that.
I mean, I think everybody who creates a series that spans console generations or doesn't, maybe expands one console generation where things end up pretty differently by the end of it, would like love to have the resources and skill, you know, and team to do this. Like, it must be a developer's dream to be like,
and
yes,
that's literally
all of my games into the future all the time. Keep them modern.
Yeah, and that's literally what they said. They said they finished making Last of Us Part 2, and especially with the accessibility options, they thought, man, we wish we could do all this for Last of Us Part 1, and that's kind of how it came to fruition. If you let Naughty Dog tell the story is that they just wanted The Last of Us 1 to be like The Last of Us Part 2. Yeah. Obviously.
They're like, we got $200 million to spend. Let's just do it this way.
Different teams at studios, like projects, they're required to flex up like at different times, right? Like pre-production, mm-hmm. production, post-production. And so that's another sort of like unconfirmed report, is like just the way that production schedules are happening at Naughty Dog. They had time for a group of people to work on this before they needed to sort of enter heavy production on whatever unannounced projects the studio is working on as well. So it was one of those kind of like stars aligned kind of things, supposedly. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's like they still used all the original voice acting, all the original mocap. And so a lot of people think Last of Us Part 1 is better than Last of Us Part 2. I also think the story for Part 1 is better than Part 2. And you just get to see all those performances shine way more than you would have on the old versions of the game. But yeah, also, it's only 9 years old, so it's a little strange for it to be like it's a remake, you know?
Do you think that's a record?
I mean, I was trying to think of like instances where this has happened, right? And like even Demon's Souls was more of a ground up remake than this game was. Mm. So I really can't even pinpoint when this has ever happened. But to say a remake for Super 9 years Mario later, All-Stars. Absolutely. Yeah, Super Mario All Stars. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a good one. But yeah, I think this game is awesome. And I don't know why it exists, except for the reasons I just listed. So I guess I do. But like, the purchase making decision is on the individual. You know, it's not something I'm not dying to play The Last of Us right now. So it's not something I would buy. But when the HBO show comes out and maybe I'm like, dude, I really want to play The Last of Us. I am so glad that this version exists, because now I'll get to go back and I'm not playing what is essentially a PS3 game. I'm playing a PS5 game. So.
Yeah,
I guess that's why it exists, you know.
Yeah, but even that, like, I agree with the HBO show sentiment to a certain extent. But even that, it's mm-hmm. like, well, that it's, you know, it's a long ways off.
Yeah.
And then the people that are like watching that show that haven't played The Last of Us are going to be a little bit more casual, and casual, you know, gamers aren't like killing themselves to find a PlayStation 5 at this point. Mm-hmm. And also, the game, I would be shocked if the game is still at full price. You know,
right now,
the show comes out. So
it's so strange, because I agree. I doubt it's going to be 70 by the time the show comes out. They wanted to push. They just have this newly minted PS Plus service. This would have been the perfect game to just throw on that service.
Yeah, 6 months down the line or whatever.
I also have a prediction that now that this is done, by the time the HBO show comes out, the PC version of this will be out, because they've already announced that that's coming, but it's just coming a little bit later.
Yeah, I will say it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this performs, how this does on NPD next month. Because Sony is very good at the business of selling video games, making and selling video games. So their track record sort of speaks for itself. I think it's been a long time since they've had a big miss. So,
speaking of NPD, like, what are they competing with in September? That's like, by all counts, this is the biggest September game for sure.
Yeah.
Like when I look at the September lineup, you know,
they're going to have the full month.
They timed it well. We've talked before on the show, and something that I think about is sort of franchise management, and like the longer and longer games run, I think it matters to game developers and publishers what their on-ramp is like. Like, if you've made multiple games in a series, like, you still want it to be friendly to newcomers. You don't want it to becoming more and more like myopic and like hard to get into. And so things like, well, I don't know, this is the first one that sprung to mind, like Master Chief Collection isn't just about like, oh, well, we care about the legacy of these games and want to make money re-releasing them and updating them. It's like making sure that game and that series is accessible as they continue making it. And so maybe there's some of that at play with Last of Us. I mean, look, like, maybe they're about to announce Last of Us 3, mm-hmm. maybe not about to announcement, but maybe that's what Naughty Dog is working on. And so they're motivated to make sure that Last of Us 1 remains accessible and up to date and playable on modern hardware. Like, that wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, it's kind of a problem when, like, if you wanted to, if you're a younger gamer and you're just getting into Assassin's Creed, I don't know, weird example, because those games are so loosely connected to one another. But, like, certain franchises, it's, like, hard. You're like, okay, I want to go back and play the original. Well, I can't. And that's, like, the older and older video games get, that's a unique problem to our industry that sort of you don't have with movies or things like that.
And that's why companies like Digital Eclipse.
Yeah.
So important.
Until some story comes out where it's like, hey, this game exists and this why this is doesn't, you know, the a lot of the hubbub is like, not that this exists at all, but I guess people are theorizing, well, why are they working on this when they could be working on something else? But that's alternate universe thinking, right? We'll never know that if they didn't remake this game, that means Last of Us 3 would have come out sooner, or the next Uncharted or whatever. Yeah. So until some story comes out where it's like, hey, Last of Us 3 is so far out now because we had to work on Last of Us 1, I don't think that there's a whole lot to be angry about. It exists and you get it or you don't.
It's definitely, you know, technical staff that's capable of making a remake like this not being needed on other like having a gap in their schedules is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed Mirage is going to be the next Assassin's Creed. It cool. does make me wonder what happened to Assassin's Creed, what, Infinite? I guess that's something else.
What was
that's
that?
That's so weird. That was like their weird platform, like their weird, like
this one, yeah.
The Master Chief Collection version of Assassin's Creed that, like, all the rumors about it were crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder if something happened where they saw that wouldn't be a thing, because Ubisoft has been trying so many times with, like, Ghost Recon Breakpoint is going to be alive forever. And it's like the game lasts 4 months, you know?
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're starting to see, like, hey, that wouldn't work. But is Mirage, is that the one that, like, is actually was supposed to be an expansion or something, and then they're just making it its own game?
Apparently yes.
Yeah, but not in, like, a pejorative way, right? Like, there's a long history of games sort of starting off as, you know, big expansion packs and getting spun out into their own thing. But yeah, that's what Mirage seems like. And it's what is it is the key art, like, they announced it on Twitter just like, hey, we're making Assassin's Creed Mirage, you know, stay tuned for more.
Because it leaked, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the key
art right now must have been.
It's hinting at, like, you know, like what it looks like Baghdad, right? Or India, like the Middle East. Like, we're back in that sort of area of the world, it seems like.
Yeah. And there's another leak, I think, from Bloomberg, where it's like a similar image that said Assassin's Creed Mirage, the 40 Thieves.
The 40
Thieves. Something and so I obviously Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, like, sort of like,
so that would be like Arabia.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
right.
So that is neat. That would I think that character has like the red and blue on the arm. That's supposed to be a character from
minor character from Valhalla.
Valhalla, okay.
But I don't think I actually made it far enough into the game to even...
Oh, I did. Dude, I didn't make that connection till just now. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that goes back to what you're talking about, like a spinoff becoming a big game, right? So there's that. But yeah, I mean, clearly it could be like a gorgeous, amazing setting with that same level of like, oh, here's some fantasy from Myth, but is it actually just a person in a costume? Like, it is
Are you actually just hallucinating on drugs?
Like, yeah, it is like what Assassin's Creed is doing right now. It's like, if this was only a leak, everybody would be like, yeah, this is definitely it. But that leak happened like on it was like a tweet from a related commerce Twitter feed, and just back to back with announcing the game, which, like, do you think they have like a fail safe now for a leak where it's like,
every Assassin's Creed leaks.
Cause like they have everyone. That's right. I mean, it's just like
single year.
And in case of leak, like, send the tweet draft.
Exactly. Like, is this the stopgap where it's just like, let's just own the conversation by having a tweet ready, which is also similar to the Washington Post tweeting news today, which is something that you do when you queue up a bunch of posts and you know don't want to put embarrassing filler text in there. And they did that too. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if this is their filler.
And then when you forget to go in and actually add the correct text, you end up just tweeting news.
News.
Yeah. It would have only been if it was TK, 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 TK.
Yeah. Well, that's why you don't do that, right? But normally you come up with something I mean, it's hard when you're a news organization to come up with something that it's not going to be taken at face value.
It's funny. We were talking about this on our internal Slack, but like that's happened to IGN before, where we just end up tweeting like Spider-Man, and it ends up being like a fabulously popular tweet.
It was all planned.
Like one of our most popular tweets of all time.
So does that mean new Assassin's Creed this fall? They wouldn't announce it in September.
Although there is a Ubisoft forward.
It could be. Could be. I mean, it's not going to be the biggest game. But like, I think it's going to be a little bit smaller than Valhalla. I mean,
maybe it's a Switch only game.
The thing is, if it's not, like, then no way they would announce it now for a fall 2023, which means it's going to come out in spring 2023. And there's already too many games.
Impossible. Yeah, there's too many games. Hey, it's illegal to release that game in the spring.
Yep.
Yep. So they got to make it fall. They got to make it happen.
We'll see.
Gosh. That's the rumor, huh?
Yeah.
So
we'll find out more. We'll find out more next week.
Yeah. Next Saturday.
It's on Saturday? Man.
Yeah.
That's a terrible time.
I know. Mark and I were just talking about how we staff that up.
Yeah. We have a 3-day weekend this weekend, and we're like, and then we're working next weekend. So get your rest in.
It's also D23, which might have game news too. So it's going to be a working
weekend. It'll be a fun weekend, actually.
Okay, we're running short on time, but let's check in with the listeners.
Oh, my.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Rob from Cobb did. Rob from Cobb says, I want to start out with a nicely job for Sam for sitting in for Damon during last week's episode. I'm writing in today with a question for Sam. Last week's episode displayed a background of pinball machines. The Walking Dead, in particular, caught my eye. I'm a lifelong Walking Dead fan. Lifelong. So he's only like 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I had to see what it takes to land one of those bad Larrys. After seeing a crazy high sticker price, I wondered, how does a layman purchase one of these machines? They're basically the price of a decent used car. Is there some underground pinball trading guild? Mm-hmm. Is there a high risk of buying used machines because of the intricate machinery? This is definitely a space I want to get into. I would love to own my own machine. Any insider tips to help this blue collar boy purchase his very own machine?
Well, first of all, you need a laundromat and a sense of moxie.
So they're expensive.
They're really expensive. They do make money, so that's why there's an aftermarket that's two pronged. One is that like you can buy this game and put it in a bar and make your money back, or you can make profits off of it. So that makes the aftermarket games kind of expensive. Then there's also the collector's market, which is like older games are rare, newer games have rare versions. So the version of Walking Dead that we have here at IGN is actually the LE version, the limited edition, that has an actual different set of mechanical bells and whistles in it, that, and then a separate art package, which makes it, rare. I think there's 500 of them or something. So to get into pinball, you can go and avoid those two things. You can avoid a game that's going to earn money, and you can avoid a game that's rare. And you can go like common down the line, like 80s games like Pinbot or High Speed or Taxi or something like that. Now, those command a premium because they're just really fun games. You don't want a clunker that's no fun to play. So those didn't used to, though. So that's the bubble right now. Pinball's expensive right now. Those games cost $2,000, $2,500, $3,500, the ones I just mentioned, 80s Bally, Midway, Williams type games. Adam's Family, most common game ever made, that's a $7,000, $8,000 game now, right? And new games are $7,000, $8,000, sometimes $10,000, sometimes more, sometimes $13,000. So you can see there's like all these different tiers. So if you start really, really low tier, an EM machine, an old one from 60s or 70s, or one of those 80s games, you can get in on that ground level. Now, if you're not going to make money off of it, then that's where you're looking at starting. There's virtual pinball that goes lower than that. But if you want to get into pinball, there is the thing you mentioned also. They will take maintenance. And it's not just like, oh, do I have to worry about this game as old? That's not really the case, because they're really built to last. They're really built to take a lot of wear. But if you take one in that's never been cared for, you have to do a bunch of things to get it running, and then it's going to be pretty good. But there's just continual maintenance. There's parts that are meant to break. There's rubber rings all over the game. Mm. There's flippers. Flippers do not last forever. Every part in the flipper has to be replaced. every part except for the coil, which sometimes goes bad, which is the thing I don't want to go into. But but everything is made to break. I mean, they're like they were made to last 2 or 3 years in an arcade and not last 30 years, 60 years, 100 years, right? So even the new ones, are you even using those same parts? Anyway, what did I not cover? I'm trying to keep it succinct.
Well, I guess the reality is pinball is just it's an expensive hobby.
Yeah, but you know the thing that they tell you is to make your hobby pay, right? So it's like if you do think like, oh, I want to save up. And maybe there's a brewery next to me that has a bunch of space because people drink there and it's a bunch of brick walls. And, you know, there's a lot of there. That wall would be great with a couple of pinball machines. If you're mechanically inclined and can invest in that right now, it's a really lucrative business. It just is like it's like where else can you invest in something that you're actually going to make all your money back? You can sell the machine for the same amount that you paid for it. Like whatever you make, if you make $300 and then sell the machine, it's not like cars. They don't lose value when they walk off the lot. You know, you can usually make value on the game you just bought. So there's all that to consider.
And I'm curious, Sam, if people do what you just recommended, if you talk to your local brewery, you set up a pinball machine in there, do you insure it?
Yeah, well, you can insure yourself as a LLC company, right?
Interesting.
You could call yourself an LLC and get yourself licensed. It's going to be a couple hundred bucks to do that. You would do that if you were going to do certain things, like outright own the machine. Like the potential there is like somebody could hurt themselves on your machine or something like that. Obviously, that's just looking out for yourself. It's common business. But the person you're partnering with could very well take that on. They are going to have business insurance. They might want to co-own the machines with you and split the quarters with you. That's a very common prospect. It's like, hey, I think this would be great. Like, there's two things that can happen. One is that you can bring in a machine, see how it goes, buy another one, see how it goes, start your business that way. But there's also a way that you go to the business and say like, hey, like, you know, I have one of these. Maybe we should get a couple. You can try it out. And then they might purchase some machines and then look out for them that way. But that's not like the main concern is like you got to keep the games running and you want to do it in a place where like people might really want to play it. And I don't know. Like it's like this is it's funny to think about arcades this way. And that's not just because of video games. Like people are flocking to arcades to play games when there's not a pandemic right now. And like that's pretty cool that we live in an era that people want to go out and put quarters in games. It's still quarters, so remember, you were gonna make 75 cents per game 20 years ago, and you're still making 75 cents per game, and the games are five times as expensive, which sucks. But like, I'm not gonna pay $2 to play a pinball machine, so I get it.
All right, I appreciated that Sam talk. Mm-hmm. And that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Robert.
Where Damon
from an undisclosed location. Oh my gosh. God damn it.
Damon is also in it.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I was gone in Germany for a week and I hadn't been charging my camera. So like 30 minutes before this, I was like, oh, I should charge my camera. I guess that's how much juice I got out of it.
Even with it plugged in, that's so stupid.
Yeah, it is plugged in right now.
It's always a race against time. When I have everything on, I have my lights on and my camera on, and it all runs through my computer. And even when my computer is plugged in, the battery still drains.
My camera and my light, I can see them both draining. And they're both plugged in.
I always make it through the show, though.
Let's just do this.
Oh, let's do it live. Oh, we're doing it live.
There we go.
I don't like this.
We're going to do this. Works. Sorry. Technical difficulties.
We're in a meeting with Damon now.
Now you're in a meeting with me. More. Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, well, I'll do this. There. Some more light in here.
Totally works.
It's a different view of my room. That's my flying V base. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Robert from an undisclosed location. Let the questioning begin.
Did this game come out in the 90s?
No.
Okay.
Robert from Cobbert. Did it come out in the 80s?
No.
All right. 23 years to go. Let's see. Or 22.
Your turn, Mark.
Okay. Let's do... Did this game originally come out in the generation before the one we're in now? So PS4, Xbox One... And I don't know about Wii Switch. U? It's a weird one. I want to say Wii U. Sure.
The answer is no.
Is it available on the Nintendo Switch?
No.
Wow. Okay. So it's got to be like a PS3 360 game.
Yeah. Did this game come out in the PS3 360 era consoles?
Yes.
Wow. That's cool. I thought we were going to strike out and hit GameCube. Okay. Is this a console exclusive?
Cool. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Damon's first. Okay. Is this game exclusive to the 360?
Yes.
Great.
Ooh.
Wow. Weird.
All right.
Was this game published by Microsoft?
Yes.
Hey.
Halo or Gears.
No, they made that.
Speaking of Halo, we didn't talk about this on the show, but man, that's so crazy that they canceled the co-op out of...
Their whole roadmap is insane. It's so far out for them to be dropping updates. It's really crazy.
It makes me sad.
Is this a game in which you shoot guns?
Yes.
All right.
Is it a game where you use chainsaws on people?
No. That's it.
Okay. Are the guns in... Are you playing in first person?
Yes.
All right. I assume it's in the Halo franchise.
It could be Perfect Dark, because we talked about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised at all if there's a swerve incoming.
Yeah.
Do you play as Matt? Do you play? Well, okay, but there's Halo ODST where you don't play as Master Chief.
And Reach was the 360.
Yeah, good point. Does this game take place in the Halo universe?
No.
Oh, so it's going to be Perfect Dark.
Joanna Dark.
No.
No.
What? Oh no!
But
it was published by Microsoft.
So it's first person. We did ask first person, right?
It's first person, but yeah, it wouldn't be any of the Call of Duties because those were all.
And maybe you shoot people on a slower basis, like Quantum Break. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah. Although that's Xbox One. But yeah, One. Something like that. So first person shooting people.
It's not Mass Effect then.
Microsoft published.
Not Fables.
The first person thing, because Microsoft, you know, they publish a lot of games, but not that many first person games.
Viva Pinata's first person.
Kind of. I guess so.
You're the godlike character, but sure.
Is this a sci-fi game?
Is it a sci-fi game? I guess kind of.
What the F?
Yeah, because it can't be Destiny, because Destiny, did come out on 360.
It wasn't
the original
published
did,
by
but,
Microsoft,
but that's published by Activision. So,
soft sci-fi, not hard sci-fi.
Maybe is there like a military, like Rainbow Six? I know that's not Microsoft, but did they do anything like that? Tom Clancy-esque.
I'm trying to think about what studio would have made it.
Yeah.
Did Rare make some weird shooty something in the 360 era? I don't think so.
Could there be a Kinect game, first person?
Exactly, like maybe something like that.
Could be Dance Central. shoot.
Did Microsoft have licenses? Did they ever have a license?
I don't know. I don't think 360 era. I'm sure that I know what this game is and probably own it and played it because I had all the 360 games.
You shoot in first person. It's soft sci-fi, which I think means near future.
But is it like, okay, how many questions do we have left, Damon?
Five and a guess.
I need to know if it's like a shooter or if it's just a
like,
first person
like
game.
Right? Like an action.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Is this game like actually a first person shooter?
Yes. That's 15.
Darn it.
What?
What the
but
heck?
Not Halo, but 360 published by Microsoft.
Oh, maybe.
Wow.
That's first person. I was gonna say maybe he's like making a distinction between chainsaws and chainsaw guns, but it's not that because it's first person.
Right.
Is this game part of a series?
Well,
Whoa, here we go, boys. Buckle up.
It's part of a franchise.
What?
But this game is like a one-off.
Maybe it's okay. This is the Command & Conquer Renegade of the Command & Conquer series. Let's see here.
They did make, does that mean maybe it's licensed? Like, they didn't, Microsoft didn't publish the Riddick sequel or something, did they? I don't know.
No. What about, like, Star Wars Connect? Like,
yeah.
The only Star Wars Connect game I can think of is the Danson one.
They did say it's legit a first-person shooter, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Was there multiplayer, like, online games?
They might have published Riddick.
Riddick?
Is
this based on a license? Did we ask that already?
No, we thought about it.
Let's do that one.
Is it based on a license?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe they did the second Riddick game. Because the first one is famously a great Xbox game, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The original's OG Xbox. And
the second one's a first-person shooter? I thought...
They're both first-person.
What if it's an aeroplane first-person shooter?
Yeah, there was Crimson Skies, but that was OG Xbox.
But Riddick is not soft sci-fi.
Yeah, it is. How? He's on an alien planet.
It's hard. It's just sci-fi. That's what I'm saying. Well, okay. It's not soft sci-fi. Nobody would ever say it's written by, like, what, Heinlein? What's
Chronicles I think so.
I mean, come on. It's like it's as sci-fi gets.
Well, yeah, but that's just... I mean, okay, so we know it's licensed. Okay, did this game star? Is this Vin Diesel license?
No.
God.
That leaves you with one question and a guess.
There's always that moment every show. What other licensed FPS did Microsoft publish on the 360?
Oh, it's King Kong.
That was Ubisoft, wasn't it?
I think Microsoft might have published it.
You could easily be right. I mean... That's not a bad guess. Because
we don't need to make the guess because we have more. But let's just put a bookmark.
Well,
on that.
I like it though because it's soft.
So it wouldn't be Ubisoft necessarily.
It's soft sci-fi. It meets that criteria. It's based off a license. It's the right console generation.
Yeah.
It's first person. It's a FPS. Xbox it's probably exclusive. King Kong. It's probably King Kong. I just had it in my head that was a third party game, and I must be wrong.
Okay. Well, that was a launch game. We can either ask that or if it has the King of Monsters.
A giant gorilla.
Not the King of Monsters. Yeah. What's Yeah.
Whatever his little slogan is.
Does
this is tag team wrestling.
Does it have a big old gorilla in it?
No.
Oh, man.
Oh, I still thought you were onto something there.
King Kong was published. It's a Ubisoft game.
Okay.
I mean, so they like, could it be, is it like GoldenEye or something stupid like that?
That's what I was thinking. Like, there was that GoldenEye. Remember, there was like a GoldenEye remake?
Yeah.
But it was like Daniel Craig.
Yeah. That was on Wii, though. But there was.
That was on Wii. Also, like, I don't know. I kind of would consider all the like 007 games kind of part of a series. Not like another, this is a one-off.
There was another Bond that Rare maybe was involved in. I don't know, because there's this unmade Rare Bond game right now. So I think we just have to say GoldenEye 360. I don't know.
It's also crazy that this was.
I think
exclusive. It didn't come to PS3.
So it's Xbox 360. You know what we should ask? We're out of questions. We should ask if it was downloadable because Xbox Live Arcade was huge then. Like there was Doom and Doom 2 on XBLA and other. I'm trying to think about other FPS games that maybe got digital releases.
So the GoldenEye remake was definitely a Wii exclusive for a while. Mm-hmm. But I think there was some kind of Bond Xbox game that would have been like maybe Rare related. I don't know either.
I feel like I'm gonna be so mad when I hear it though.
All right, what is
I'll tell you, with since you're at your guess, I can tell you haven't gotten close to it.
Okay.
Wait,
I know what it is. It's Shadowrun.
Yeah, it's Shadowrun.
We got it. That counts as a win.
That does count.
What? I'm not going to argue it. It's Shadowrun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? So Shadowrun is based on a board game license, right?
Well, the tabletop. And it was way ahead of its time. It was a class-based multiplayer game years before Overwatch, before it like took over the world.
Yeah. Really?
What about like Team Fortress? This would be around that time.
Right? Yeah. But like the classes in this game were really, really weird. Like they were like just incredibly different from one another and how they played. And
how'd
operated.
You get that, Justin?
It just popped into my head. I remembered I was trying to think about other 360 shooters.
I'm not sad that I thought I would be upset. I don't know.
Isn't there like a Shadowrun that was like just announced or like just something?
There's three computer RPGs that are Shadowrun. They look like old. They're like top down RPGs.
Yeah, isometric, I think.
Yeah, isometric RPGs, Shadowrun Hong Kong and a couple others. I played the first one. It was good.
And this is just called Shadowrun, huh?
Yep.
Man.
And it was, I think it was a failure. It was developed by FASA Interactive, and they went out of business immediately after launch.
Yikes.
And I say soft sci-fi because, like, I always thought of it as, like, cyberpunk when I played, like, the Super Nintendo versions, but there's also magic.
Yeah, it's, like, it's fantasy sci-fi.
It's fantasy sci-fi. That's, like, the whole thing. That's Shadowrun's whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll allow it.
Well, you got there. I will also allow it. Shadowrun. Thank you for the suggestion, Robert, in an undisclosed location.
And I got that's it. Be all the Shadowrun. That was amazing. That was an amazing win.
That's going to be all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Jobert working behind the scenes to make this episode happen. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Before we start, Damon, one quick anecdote. For the first time in the state of Iowa, I got recognized by a GameScoop fan.
Wow. Cool. That's amazing. Was that
we were at a restaurant.
Cool.
And but to be fair, I don't ever go anywhere I do anything. So maybe it would happen more it would often happen if I left my house.
Daily if you
left. That's amazing.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.